From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
And welcome to Defrag Tools, the show about Windows internals and Microsoft internals. We're going to do a little bit about Windows internals today, I think.
Bit of debugging.
Debugging! That's my favorite thing in the world to do.
Seriously,
it's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So yeah, you guys, three or four episodes ago, asked for me to... We had a... In the SDK episode, we went through and found a whole lot of dump files on my machine.
You made a little like side comment, like, yeah, well, maybe one of these days we'll do a show where we look at these. And people were commenting, going, yes, please do that.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay.
Okay.
Well, you know, we are your humble servants.
Yep, we're here to please.
That's right. So let's look at some dump files.
Yeah, so before we do that, let's just do the absolute minimum thing is how we got these dump files in the first place. So we'll bring up a min command prompt.
Proc dump? Did we proc dump these?
Yeah, but these are all proc dumps. And this actually what was in the comments a bit was that people have got these dumps from proc dump, but mm-hmm. haven't done anything with them. So
yeah.
Anyway, we copy a proc dump.
Got dumps, now what?
I'm just going to uninstall it and then reinstall it. We're getting full dumps, MA, memory all. Mm-hmm. If you've got no hard drive space issues, just get a full dump. That means you'll not be missing any data.
Right.
If you have version 7 or higher, it uses the current folder. So it will default to WUR and C dumps when I ran it. So. That's it. So if you get
and
a crash,
the dash I is
what install.
Again? Install. Right. Okay.
Yeah. So and ignore. I mean, this is the internal command line that runs when it happens. Get me a full dump. So this came from here.
Right.
Minus J is just in time debugger. So this is interacting with Windows Error Reporting. So Windows Error Reporting will call this command line for us, and then pass these three magic numbers, which are. Procdump then uses to make a really nice, beautiful dump target.
Nice.
And we'll talk about that.
Okay.
So, I don't know. Should we go alphabetical?
Yeah, let's take a look.
Actually, we've got a kernel dump, which you grabbed.
We'll do the kernel dump later.
Yeah. So let's start with this background task host. I know that that one's complex. Let's start with these really basic ones. So this is an MSIT tool that's internal that for some reason crashed.
They push it down on all our machines and it causes us no end of heartache.
All IT departments in the world are bad, not just
yes,
ours, no, no, yours. No. So what you've got here on the initial spew is quite important and to get right. And we've talked about this in the past about getting your symbol path right and various other things. One of the things you really want to do is match the architecture. So we're in the x86 debugger and this is an x86 target. And if you have followed along over the years, you will know that we've set an environment variable, a PDE architecture flip, that will synchronize the architecture. And with that, you have to have minus a PDE.dll on the command line for WinDBG. So when those two things exist, PDE will kick in and do magic and make sure that we're matched. So
we kind of covered setting that a couple episodes back, right?
And same thing goes to SimulPath. Now, based on last week's SimProxy, we're now using the SimProxy local. This, though, is actually in the proxy talking to the Microsoft Symbol server. So if you're having if you're having symbol resolution issues, you need to make sure that you've got at least the Microsoft Symbol server.
If you were using the SimProxy.
Or even if you have it local, if you don't have that. Use the same string, but just have it where this string would be here.
Right. So right. That would just be pointing to the.
So once you've got past that initial spew, you're the right architecture, and you're matching all this. This gives you information about the OS it was from. The debug session time is the time the dump was created, so this was taken in March. The system was up for 22 hours at this point in time, and interesting, the process uptime is not available, which is kind of weird. Oh, that's because...
I'm missing a symbol.
NTDLL is not available,
it's
which
kind
is
of weird.
Kind of annoying. Anyway, actually, this may have been a... that's a bit weird, but I was going to say it might have been a private version of NTDLL, but probably wasn't. Mm. So what you'll see a lot in user dumps is these lines right here. This dump has an exception of interest stored in it. So when a dump is created, there's multiple ways that the metadata can be built into the file. And one of those is to include what's called an exception context record.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has an exception and it has a context. The exception is the code. It just says, access violation or you know, wherever the code is, file not found, whatever. Mm-hmm. And the context is the registers at that point in time. So if we do a K right now, you'll notice that actually Windows error reporting is on the stack. And so the exceptions happened, it's been gobbled up and remembered, yeah. And then we've gone and run all this Windows error reporting code.
And that all happens before the dump gets triggered.
And this this thing here, wait for multiple objects, is actually Windows error reporting waiting for procdump to write the file.
So a lot of people might look at this and go, whoa, what's all this window? We must have had a crash in Windows error reporting. And that's not what happened.
No. Yet. And that's actually half the reason why the SPU's here is to remind you to wind back the clock to history, and that's what the ECXR command does. So it says apply the exception context record. And so now when we've gone back in time, we are now looking at this saved state.
So this is where we actually crashed. Yeah. This is in 32-bit code, evidently.
Yep. And then we do a K, and it's in CLR code.
Right.
All right. So this is where frameworks and stuff like that really start playing the game. If this was like a normal C++ native application and wasn't really using a framework, then you'd probably be, at this point, pointing to the crash.
You'd be right at the crash, yeah.
When it comes to CLR, you need to, it's actually, much like the Windows Error Reporting has packaged it up and then deferred it, it actually also itself has, with all this code, packaged up the exception and then thrown it.
We're almost like two levels deep from where the actual problem was.
Now, the great thing about the debugger is it kind of really gives you this tip right at the start here. I mean, what it does is it gives you on this line, the one after this SPU line, it gives you the exception code and tells you what type it is. So the debugger knows about a lot of the codes and knows that it's a CLR exception. These numbers on the front, this CF0, that's the process ID, and this 574 is the thread ID. Mm-hmm. If you want to see them all across the whole box, or the whole dump file, I should say, tilde command, and it will show you. So there's the CF0, so this was process ID 3312,
right.
And then here's our three threads that are in it. The dot on the front is the exception thread. So what I'll do, just to demonstrate this, I'll change to 2 and then run it again. So this is now our current thread. The dot is the current, but it actually tells you, by the way, the one with the hash was where the exception happened.
Right.
So where does that come from?
So the dot, I guess, is the context you're currently in.
Yeah.
And then the hash is
what the context is. Was, yeah. And so if you actually want to know what that is, there's a command called last event. And that's actually where the top SPU actually is deriving its information. It says the last exception event happened on this process, on this thread, for this code at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that's where, up the top here, that's where this came from. Right? Now, if those things don't exist, the odds are it's not a crash dump, and there's actually about 500 types of dump files, literally 500 types, which I have to deal with. But in general, when it comes down to a proc dump crash, there's only one you have to worry about, and you don't have to worry about all the other variants of it. So there's things, there's more complex things. Mm-hmm. So the last event tells you what thread it was. And so, you want to make sure you're on that. There's a couple ways of changing threads. You can use that and then a number, which comes from here, right? And then you set that.
Mm-hmm.
The other way is to use the tilde command and then use that 574. This is in hexadecimal. And the square brackets means use the thread ID. So
and
now,
the S means switch to that context. Right?
And so we've jumped from 2 back to 0, right? Mm-hmm. So we're on the right thread. Mm-hmm. The last event showed us that. The ECXR has showed us back in time what it was,
right.
But we're kind of not really getting to a root cause
here. We're still just seeing all this like .NET framework, CLR
code. So one of the things about last event is it's only showing you the exception code, but there's a whole lot of payload with that. So there's the exception record, which is the code and a whole lot of information blocks. And then there's the context record, which is all about registers. So if you want to see the additional information about an exception, the command is ECXR -1, and the -1 says use the one that's packed into the last event, roughly.
EXR?
Yeah, EXR.
No, EXR. EXR minus one. Okay.
So ECXR
right.
changes context to the exception.
Right.
EXR displays the record of it.
Right.
All right. And what we'll get here is you'll get that exception code that you saw before, some flags, which is just more of a internal metrics. And it says there's five parameters, and you can have lots and lots of these. And then each one of these will represent something. So the exception happened at this address, at this code. There's five parameters. The first parameter is, looking just by the AD on the front, looks like an H result, and it is.
Oh.
Array subscript out of the range. So you've already narrowed it down to an exception reason, like you know roughly the context of it.
Bang ERR is a good command.
Yes, so that's part of PDE.
You see anything that that's part of your PDE?
Yeah. There's also error, right? Which is part of which is part of EXT, and you'll get a slightly different one. The one in PDE is a little bit more focused towards CLR and a couple of other things. Mm-hmm. The one built into EXT.dll is a little bit more Windows focused.
And that's so the one that ships with the debugger.
Yeah.
So, but as you can see, that one didn't know the text to this one, but the PDE did.
Yeah, PDE has a CLR error subsystem in it. So it knows, it's from this facility, and it goes and actually invokes the CLR and asks the CLR to give it its code.
So native type errors, you'd use Bang error. CLR type things, you typically use PDE.
Yeah, I think PDE's error actually nearly covers every single scenario of error. So
It's stick with that one then. Use Andrews.
So this one, so while we're here, since we've got some interesting numbers, this 7 on the front, 7's, you'll notice up here as well, 7 usually represents code. Code is loaded at the highest point in the address space. So in 32-bit, that's 7's, and in kernel, you'll see, in 64-bit, you'll see FFFF. Mm-hmm. So LN is list nearest symbol, just for the sake of it. Is there anything close? And yes, there was some CLR code that is, this instruction is minus one from where that is. So once again, not really the biggest help.
Not too helpful.
But we've done what we can with that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The point of this is, this was a CLR exception, exactly the same steps for any dump file. You can, as long as you follow those steps, make sure you're on the last event, look at the exception record. If there's an ECXR change to it, you're a long, long way into it. Now, because this is a CLR exception, we have the SOS debugger extension.
Mm-hmm.
And as of Windows 8, the SOS extension is actually automatically loaded by the debugger. Right. And actually, in this case, it's actually loaded twice because PDE's used it as well for some reasons. What it will do is, if the version of the framework within the dump file matches the one in the framework folder on your local disk, it will use SOS out of there.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't match, it will contact the symbol server and actually download the DLL.
Nice.
Right? And put it into your cache. And you will see this in other ones. You'll see it in your sim/SOS folder.
Mm.
And so it has to be version locked. And that's how it works. So SOS relies on another DLL called MS-Core DACWorks. So there's MS-Core Works.dll, which is the .NET runtime, and CLR.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a file called MS-Core DACWorks, DAC, Data Access Component or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so SOS asked the DAC to decrypt the dump file. So SOS is just like an extension. DAC is the engine, and then the engine talks to the raw data. So you can work out what two are missing. So there's a command called .core.dll, and it'll tell you what DAC is loaded. So you may have the DAC, but you might have the SOS missing. You can't even get to the SOS unless the DAC's there. So you may have the DAC, but you may not have SOS. So you need to work out which one's missing.
Mm.
If you can't download it from the Microsoft share, the easiest thing to do is go to the box that had the exception and just copy the files off of there. You just need MS-Core DACWorks and SOS.dll out of that folder. Just put them next to the dump file, and then you can just do .load SOS.dll.
It'll find it.
And it'll find it, and it'll work. All right, because this is a CLR dump, the first command you want to run is bang PE. So when a CLR exception happens, it actually fills in the address of that CLR exception in a thread local storage slot, mm-hmm. Which is a per thread magic place of memory, right? The thing to be aware of, so this looked up that slot, found the address, and has printed the exception. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean it's active, right? Because it never wipes it saying, I'm finished with it. It was just the last one stored.
Okay, so this is the last exception on that thread.
Yes, but it doesn't mean it's active. Mm-hmm. Now, what makes it active is the exception code. If it is a CLR exception code, then it is active. Mm. And we're actually going to see another example I think I've got on the disk where it's not the CLR exception code, but the exception code is file fast. And it's the one example where if you get a system.execution exception, that one case actually throws a different error code. It actually throws the file fast error code. So there's one proviso there. All right, so in this case, as I said, you can just open up the dump file, see that CLR spew at the top, run bang PE, and there's
your
answer.
That's pretty much it, right there.
And you can trust it. We've gone through all the steps to prove the point, mm-hmm. But we can press, and you can also see that the exception code here matches the exception code here. Mm-hmm. Right? They come from different places, mm-hmm. but they correlate, so you can pretty well be sure that this exception that we've found with PE correlates to the current CLR exception.
And that I believe was that's the out of bounds exception, out of range exception.
Yeah. Right. And so we'll probably get exactly the same text.
Yeah.
And that's slightly different.
Index
array
subscript.
That uses a different lookup.
Different text, same thing.
So that's not a bad start. So let's go through these other MSIT ones. They're all nice and embarrassing for us, I guess.
Whoever coded this.
This is another CLR exception. So we just get to do bang PE. The path is not in a legal form. So.
And again, here on this sort of stack gives us a lot of MS Corelib, a lot of CLR goo.
Yeah, so this service called into, or these three things called into the file system watcher class namespace, and then way down here, wherever it was passed, it was not very happy. So there's another command, DSO from SOS, dump stack objects. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we can find the system.string that got passed in. Mm-hmm. And so there's a whole lot on here, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to use PDE, and I grep at this down to anything that says system.string. It's not case sensitive, and this is SOS. And so there is five strings on the stack, and these ones are blank. So the odds are a blank string was passed in to the thing. And you actually, there's actually an argument path illegal was actually raised in some point. The other one that we can do is, I don't know if it's going to find any class with the word, whoops. What am I doing? All right. So the only exception we can find on the stack is that argument exception, which is what bang PE found in the first place. If we click on here, we see the object version of it. See how it's dump obj right down the bottom here? Mm-hmm. So that's a different view of it. So if we look at it this way, I'm typing terrible today. We get this constructed view of it. Mm-hmm. If we click on it this way, we actually see the individual members. So up here was kind of like the nice view of it. And here's the message. So the message up here is the path is not a legal form. And we click on here, the path is not a legal form. Now what's right. Interesting is a lot of these exception classes have additional information. And you'll see that all these ones are all from the standard system.exception base class, mm-hmm. and then you get this EDI lock static, and then after that you're now looking at the derived classes members, and so sometimes in one of these members, in this case it's parameter name, they'll actually specify more details about what went wrong. So say it's a file exception, you may have the file name in it.
Right,
stuff like that.
So you should maybe look at that.
Now, bang PE only shows you the system.exception view of the world. It doesn't show you any additional members of the derived class. And so if you wanted to see more about that, you do it, you dump the object. So what we did is we had the bang PE, I'll do it again. We have the address here, and then dump object, and then I'll copy paste this example, and view it that way instead, and get the redraw bug. Now, in this case, it's zeros, so it wasn't filled in. A lot of these constructors to these classes have these as optional parameters, and quite frankly, from experience, they're not filled in by hardly anybody. Hardly anybody on a file exception or argument exception fills in that additional information. And if you're a developer, fill it in, because you're only helping yourself.
Right.
So that's really as far as you can go with this one.
Looks like somebody sent a null path to a
to a file system watcher class. Which is
You can't. What do you want me to watch? I want you to watch nothing.
Yeah, there's two bugs there.
Yeah.
One, they sent a blank, and two, they didn't catch the exception.
Right.
So, there's another one. System dot. So this was once again a CLR exception, and this one's a. Abnormal, abandoned mutex exception. So
that's kind of odd.
There's a mutex on the stack, and we can go through this and look for mutexes. And but yeah, this is the whole thing is very repetitive in what this type of approach. And then I think the last one's probably also going to be a CLR one based on. Yeah, it's another CLR one.
Same app, isn't it?
Yeah, same
no,
app.
No, a different app.
And this one threw an exception. Restart failed after five attempts. It actually threw an exception for the intent of actually crashing the app, which is not the best approach. Or if it did throw it, it didn't catch it. So that was very CLR focused ones. And this, I'm guessing this one here, what's this one? This one's CLR as well.
Maybe.
Or a bit more stack on this one. Unauthorized access exception.
To a named pipe server stream.
How do you get that?
Down front on the, you've got a WinIO error named pipe server stream.
So we may, this one's a good example where we may be able to find a string.
Looks to me like they tried to open a named pipe that they didn't have permissions for or something.
Yeah. We didn't find the string. But the named piped we may be able to find. No, we didn't. So, it's kind of hard to find. Oh, it might be in this byte array, the name of it. All right, and UTF-8 encoding. And we can dig into this as much as. The other thing we could do, I'm just going to try it for luck, is DPX, and we'll use DPX and I'll dump file to more detail, but just show me all the Unicode strings that are flying around.
Oh.
And. What we found was a path, which is just the program itself, and that's about it. Yeah, so we didn't really find the name pipe, but at least we know what the deal is.
Yeah.
All right, so that's
So it opened a name pipe, didn't have permissions, didn't know what to do, just blew up.
Yeah.
Didn't catch the exception.
All right. And then, I mean, most of these, when it comes to access violation, or access denieds and stuff like that, just run process monitor, repro the issue, and then you'll see the access denied.
You'll see it open that name pipe, most likely.
Yeah, see it file. So let's do this background task, guys. I'm kind of forgetting what these are about now. This one is, actually, this is a stow exception. I'm going to keep that for, I think we're going to run out of time this week, so I'm going to do that one next week. All right, so this one is an access violation. So all I was doing is scanning down and looking for this line of code, this line of text, right?
So access, this one is a native
And this is you're going to see much more common. This is more, not everything's a native, not everything's a CLR crash,
right?
And so that's the access record. So let's just have a quick look at the exception record to see what it looks like. So this is going to be a access violation in some office code.
Which we don't have symbols for.
And then the first, because it's an access violation, it's a well-defined layout of parameters. Parameters 0 is read, write, execute, and I think it's 012 from memory, or 013 or something, whatever numbers are. Some bit mask, maybe. Either way.
Let's read, because that's what you
did. Yeah, but I'm not sure if it's represented as 012 or represented as 02 or 04.
Yeah.
So either way, the debugger understands that this is a access violation record. It's well defined, and it knows how to turn this keyword into the word read, and then it has the address. Mm-hmm. So this 2C screams at me, I know what's happened already.
This looks like a null pointer dereference into a structure.
Yes. So, and you'll get used to these things. Like when you see certain offsets or certain numbers, you'll understand. And we'll just go through this, and it's probably where we'll end today's episode, and we'll do the rest next week. So, an access violation is just accessing memory that you're not allowed to. So sometimes you try to read from an address that doesn't exist. Sometimes you try to write to it, which doesn't exist, and sometimes you try to execute from it. So when you're talking about read and writes, we're really talking about what the assembler is doing to data, where with execute, it's more about what the instruction pointer is, right? So in this case, we're going to be focusing on the data side of the story. As the SPU said, please use ECXR to get to the right context. And what it does is it's jumped to that point in time, that context record, that represents the crash. And so here is our 2C, and you can even see on the front, it's actually DS, data segment. So if it was a code-based error, you'll see CS, code segment. So this is at the microcode level in the CPU that it matters, but it's actually how the cache coherency and all that stuff works. The point is, it is a data thing. It's trying to access memory as data rather than execute memory. Mm-hmm. Bit of math, and so this is a read, and so it's trying to do a compare. So it's trying to see if EBX is equal to the equivalent of all this. The square brackets means dereference the pointer. So roughly it says, read the value at that address and compare it to EBX.
So we can see EAX is zero, ECX yep. is 24 hex, and
plus eight.
So that's where we get that 2C.
And we can actually do the math, 24 plus 8, just to prove the point.
2C, right.
All right, and that's how we get to 2C. So EAX is a null pointer to a object. ECX probably is either an offset into an array mm-hmm. or an offset into a structure within the structure.
Yeah.
So when structures are laid out, you get this big block of memory, and can you use your hands to put another pair up? So this is a small one. So this is like small.
Small. I see.
You might have a structure, right? And then you might have another structure that's defined. So the Chad structure, and I have the Andrew structure. If I have that as a member, then the memory is just going to be linear. So the zeros here, the ECX has got us to here, and then somewhere here on an offset, let's say at the 8, represents something else.
Right.
Now, if that was a pointer to Chad, then you'll get a different dereferencing, and you won't really have that double plus. Mm-hmm. You'll have two statements. So we already kind of, just from experience, and both of us just saw the 2C and it just yelled at us. I already know from the assembler that it's a structure within a structure to an offset member that's derived from a null. And really, you've kind of answered the question about, you know, what exactly went wrong. The question is now, who did it?
Right.
Now, if you use the unassemble backwards command from dot means the current instruction, we can see the history of where this came from, and then we can say unassemble forward. And so here's the compare, and then we can say, well, EAX came from here, moved the data from here into EAX. Mm-hmm. ECX came from EDI, which came from something else, and blah, blah, blah. But the point is, this command is actually where the zero originated.
Yeah, because we would assume that 2.8 or what, 24 is probably correct, that offset into whatever structure.
Yeah.
The problem is we don't have the actual pointer to the structure.
Yeah.
That's the zero where it should be a pointer to something valid.
Yeah. And the odds are in this scenario, because of ESI, what the register is used for, we called this function, and normally it returns something. And we didn't check for nulls, and then the location where it got returned was in ESI. It happened to be a structure within a structure within a structure. Mm-hmm. So that one plus 14 got us to this thing. So it was probably a structure with a pointer to something.
Right.
And then we dereference the pointer, try to access a member at an offset. and then we had access to a member of that member at another offset, and then we blew up. And so there you go, you kind of got the gist of what went wrong. Now that doesn't really help you much.
No.
It doesn't really, no. Okay, great,
yeah,
I know.
Yeah, exactly. I know MSO seems to have a bug in it.
So I'm just doing a K. You know, you've got lots of ordinal calls and stuff like that. So this is kind of where you, as a third, you know, outside of Microsoft without symbols, you kind of get stuck. You go, well, I kind of know what the issue is. First thing you do is LM, list module, verbosely, mm-hmm. with a mask, which is like wildcard. Mm-hmm. And then we're just going to do MSO. I could put asterisks there, but I just want to be explicit. So the first things first is I can look at this and go, well, it's an April 2015 version of Office.
Pretty new.
So if it was 2014 or 2013 or something, first thing I would do is go look for a cumulative update or something like that to Office.
Make sure it's not some bug that's already fixed.
Yeah, because I mean, this is the whole point of the telemetry pipeline, is to get this stuff in, recognize it, get it fixed, patch it, out the door it goes, right?
Right.
So this one's relatively new, so I kind of assume it's probably not at that point. But let's just see if we can work out, just by some scraping, once again using dpxdu. If I take the command, the filtering commands off, it's just going to find anything it can find. It's going to find strings, symbols, structures, lots of things. And right at the top, we have, you know, Windows error porting, which we, you know, we've talked about how we have to jump past.
Mm-hmm.
Oops, I touched the screen then.
Oh, no. Luckily, we've got that SIM proxy caching everything. It's very, very fast to get back.
That is exactly the benefit right there. You saw it. So there's Windows error porting. It's generating the path of the file name so we can actually put it in the report. That's what all that is. And then we've still got the error porting happening. There's the unhandled exception filter. This is the thing that kicks in and says, bop, bop, you did something wrong. And there's, now we're starting to be in the code where everything's going wrong, more exception handling. And we actually have some bit of evidence here now building up. So some type of slash software key or something.
Maybe some registry hive thing.
And look at that, we've got a log file.
Oh, look at that. That could be interesting.
So, let's get that far into it. And then it was Office, actually it seems to be happy. Office, there you go, MSO logs.
Mm.
And then it's got some weird characters on it. But actually that kind of makes sense because there's actually some numbers and letters in the middle of it between that and .log.
Some wild card kind of.
It's their reserve word.
Substitution thing they're using.
Yeah. And so we have log files. And I mean, this was a while ago, but you know, you have a log file here and you can read this and
it might give you some more evidence.
I mean, I'm not going to debug this to nth degree, but
well,
you know, it's,
we kind of can't because we don't have the symbols or the source. But
well, know, I'm saying I'm not going to read the log file.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And also, I can tell you that log file has rolled since the dump happened, so it's not there anyway.
Probably, yeah.
But it's and the ICC profile, which is it's color.
International Color Consortium, I believe.
Yeah,
it's image color matching. I don't know what that has to do with anything other than MSO seems to use it.
Well, maybe they're trying to render the screen the right way for a picture or something.
Yeah, it could be.
So it was CSI client. What's that? Dynamic Case Sync client. So maybe
the document cache.
Maybe it's something.
This is something to do with. Actually, I know what the CSI Sync client is. Something to do with OneDrive for Business or. It's how it's like Office, SharePoint, how it syncs stuff up to the cloud.
Cool.
That's what this is used for.
So, but we've kind of covered the some big boys. Let's round it off there. We'll do a bit more next week and see how far we get. And based on how many are left, we may actually get to 3 weeks. We'll see how we go.
Fun stuff.
But yeah, open up that file. Make sure you got your symbols right. Make sure you got the right business debugger, because that matters. Look at the last event to make sure you're on the right thread and the right context.
Mm-hmm.
If it's got an ECXR, use it. Move down to it, because you know there's no point looking at the future when you want to look at the past. And then if you want more details about the exception, .exr-1. If the exception is CLR-based, then Bang PE. And then you can look at the member variables through Bang DO, then the same address to see the members. And that might give you a bit more clue about what's going on. And then scraping the stack for other objects, because the CLR is very easy to review without symbols.
Mm-hmm.
Bang DSO, dump stack objects. And and then if all else fails, fall back to PDE, DPX. You can minus DU for display Unicode, which is what everything is these days.
Mm-hmm.
And and just use DPX in general to scrape things, see what you can find.
Look for little things of interest.
It follows every pointer 5 away, mm-hmm. which is a long way.
Mm-hmm.
So it does discover things quite far and wide.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing useful in PDE is ERR, just to decode some of these
exception codes. Yeah, error codes.
So, PDE is going to be used a lot more when we go onto these store application issues, which we'll go next week.
Right. And of course, you can get all those, you can get all these, I lost my train of thought thanks to my noisy laptop, up on the OneDrive, Defrag Tools OneDrive.
Yes.
We've got all these debugger extensions that we've used and all that sort of stuff.
Yep, click on the homepage, and it's right there for everybody to download. All our scripts we've used, the example programs.
PDEs.
Here's the thing, except the registry and the symbols correctly. PDEs here, that's really the only one we've used today. This SIE EXT is an old one that was good for critical section analysis and deadlock analysis, which we haven't used at the moment, but that's much more when you've got hangs, which mm-hmm. is not really going to be a crash, so
right.
we probably won't use that much. But yeah, download them and watch episode 131 of Defrag Tools to work out or to learn how to lay out your hard drive correctly. And
set it all up, get all this stuff working.
Yep.
Great.
And we'll do more next week, I guess.
All right. Well, thanks for watching. As always, if you have questions and comments, put them in the show notes down below or email us at defragtools@microsoft.com. And thanks for watching.
Have a good week.